Thanks for listening to the Woodward Podcast Network. Check out more shows by searching for us on Spreaker or wherever you catch your podcasts. The Woodward Podcast Network with Krupka Dental Associates.
Hello, this is Dr. John Krupka from Krupka Dental. We now have the Solea laser. You can have your fillings done without needles nor drills. We are a full-service dental office and always accepting new patients. To learn more about me and my friendly team, visit KrupkaDental.com.
This is Pat Reeve from Driven TV. You're listening to Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick here on The Score.
From the Fast Sign Studios, more than fast, more than signs. It's Living the Outdoors with Mark Druick, presented by Fleet Farm. Be part of the show by calling 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. Now, here's your host, Mark Druick.
Greetings and welcome to Fleet Farm's Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Thanks for tuning us in tonight. Glad to have you along. We are getting ever so close to the 2022 gun season. Next week, we'll be coming to you live from Fleet Farm for 2 hours, and you can join us then. You can stop by the store, or you can stop by the stop by the store. Check us out. Ask any questions. Alex is going to be behind the boards here. Alex, are we going to take any questions?
We can take questions next week. Absolutely. That's all right. Not a problem at all.
Perfect. Perfect. So we'll be ready to do all that. So Randy Brocktrop will be with us. We'll have Brian Woodbury, the game biologist. We'll have a couple of wardens along. And we're going to talk for 2 hours about deer hunting. But tonight, got a couple of guys in here going to be talking about trapping. And I've got Jim Binder, which is kind of a gentleman who's been on the show. I don't know, Jim, how many times you've been on now?
I was trying to figure that out. 5 or 6, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of like you've been one of those multiple Saturday Night Live guests that
well, I'm shy. You know how that is. Yeah, I never have anything to say.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, Jim, we've been talking about trapping at least once a year for quite a while now. And I know we've had you on and we've had Randy on, and now you brought another guest with you tonight. Why don't you go ahead and introduce your guest and tell him how you got to know him.
Well, my partner in crime tonight is Steve Kruger. And Steve is I guess we kind of hooked up because he keeps bees and so do I. And so we kind of co-op together. But then his son was one of my Trapper's Ed instructors, and we kind of leaned on him for a while. And eventually he is also an instructor, and we have some tales to tell, kind of like John Hedke. Steve seems to be there when I do something stupid, fall through the ice, or
that's a lot, by the way.
Boom! So, he's cracking on you already.
I tried to talk Zach Seitz into coming, but you've got him next week for 2 hours. Yep. I trap with Zach also, So there's just a bunch of us. For me, trapping is not a private deal. It used to be that way when I was a kid, but now it's more of a social event. And so sure. I think Steve would agree that if we don't have fun doing it, and it can be 20 below zero, we're still having fun. If it wasn't fun, we wouldn't be doing it.
Right. Exactly. Well, Steve, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Well, thanks a lot, Mark. I sure appreciate it. This is my second trip here, actually.
I wish I could say I remember, but,
I'm not quite as stick in your mind like Jim.
Oh, yeah, Jim definitely has left an impression. It's hard to forget. But, obviously, you guys trap together, as Jim had just stated. But let's kind of talk a little bit about what made you get involved in trapping and what made you get involved in the outdoors.
Well, I've always been involved outdoors with hunting and fishing since I was just a little kid, but... And I used to trap when I was younger as a child, but then life gets in the way of fun. Then you get a job, and then you can't have any fun anymore.
Right.
But I always trapped, and then my son Aaron got seriously into trapping, and Jim, he was one of Jim's students and became an instructor, and he kind of talked me into getting back into trapping, And so I did, and kind of got into it in almost too big a way. We got more trapping equipment. We could probably set a trap everywhere. But we always, we used to trap together. Now Jim and I do a lot of things together, and one of them is trapping. And like Jim said, we do bees together. But it's fun. It's kind of rewarding, and if you're going to do it for money, don't do it, because there's no money to be made in it.
Okay.
But it's a good time, and it's a lot of fun if you have a partner with you.
Okay.
I mean, I go out, a lot of times I get up at, you know, dark 30 in the morning, and I still go out and start checking traps, and when you're by yourself, yeah, you do it, you do your thing, and you check your traps, but when you got somebody with you, it breaks the monotony of the dull moment in between sets and in between, because you always give each other a little bit of berries about, well, that's kind of a small one, isn't it? You know,
but, you know, right, right. You
know. Steve can teach otters tricks. Now, I don't have the ability to make otters jump over stuff, but all you need if you want to have a performing otter is to have Steve set a trap for an otter.
Anybody can just catch an otter in a trail, Jim. It takes. I want it to be a challenge. 3 years now, I can't catch an otter.
But Mark,
I knew there was an underlying something here.
I got the most beautiful trails and slides right on the Wolf River, and do you think I can catch that darn otter?
Nope. He does have a story to tell. I'll give the preface. When you pull an otter in the boat,
that's a beaver.
I'm sorry, a beaver. When you pull a beaver in the boat, especially a beaver that weighs almost as much as you do, kind of get a little bit away from the edge. Otherwise, a lot of river comes in with that beaver. Steve, you're on.
It's not good. It's not. It was like the 9th of December, about 3 or 4 years ago. Cold, cold, cold. Ice flows coming down the river, and we had beaver problems. So I went out. Jim had kind of given me some instructions on how to do this. And we found this new type of trapping device. So I put 3-4 of these trapping devices out, and I went out in the morning. I had to chop my way with the boat out into the open water so I could get to the traps.
Mm-hmm.
And ice floes are coming down the river, one right behind the other one. So the first thing I do is I go out and I check the first trap, and it's kind of goofed up. And these are 330 conibears. These are like major traps. So you get your arm in them, you're in trouble. So the first thing that happens is I get my finger in the spring trap. So now I'm struggling to get my finger out of it. Now I got a sore finger. And I'm in a little boat. I got a little flat bottom boat that's about 30 inches wide and 12, 14 feet long. And I got a 6-horse Johnson motor on it. And now I go down and I drove right by one trap. No beaver in it. I look up ahead of me, and the other one is the float is floating funny. I said, "There'll be a beaver in that one." So I go over there and I'm excited now. This is my first beaver. I am super excited. So I grab the line and I go to pull that beaver in, and I'm pulling him up. I get him up, and I'm in the center seat. There's the front of the boat, a center seat, and the back seat. I'm in the center seat, and I'm pulling him over the side, and I'm all by myself, which is a no-no. Now it's a no-no. And I'm pulling this beaver, and I get looking, and I mean, it looks like I got a 50-gallon drum on the end of this trap. And I also happen to look about just before the water starts coming over the side of the boat. Now, I'm in the Wolf River with ice flows coming. If the water would have started coming over, I was going in a drink. And it was cold. And I mean, it was cold. And but so I said, I'd let go of the beaver quick. I walked, got around to the front of the boat, and I wrestled that cotton picker in the boat. But I tell you, it was a 53-pound beaver, wet and heavy. It was fun, but scary by myself. And that's why I said, have a partner with you. It's a lot more fun.
Well, you know, oh my goodness. That's as big as you are.
Just about, yeah. Well, not as fat, but.
You know, I think when you mentioned it's fun to have a buddy, you know, and I think that applies to so many things in the outdoors, obviously. You know, bow hunting doesn't qualify for that. You really don't, unless you're, you know, mentoring somebody or something like that, and you're in a blind or whatever. But, you know, trapping, duck hunting, grouse hunting, even, you know, gun hunting, you can somewhat do that with a partner if you want to. But,
absolutely.
You know, when you take a look at that from so many different aspects, you know, and just mentioning the story that you just told us, safety.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and especially when you get, you know, I mean, none of us are kids anymore, you know, and doing this stuff that we think we could have, you know, that we could have done 20 years ago doesn't come so easy, you know, and if you get injured or something like that, I mean, there's always that to consider. And I talk about it all the time on the show is that, you know, when you get a little bit older, you should never stop ever doing these things, but you walk a little differently. You're not you know, going in places that maybe you shouldn't go, getting stuck in the mud with waders on where you shouldn't be. And, you know, all of these things that, you know, when you're younger, that's fine because you can physically deal with it. But, you know, some of that stuff can be.
And physically they can deal with it. A lot of us are no longer in prime condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little, can be a struggle to get out of a, you know, you talked about being stuck in the mud with waders on. I have a Super Black Eagle. I've had to use my Super Black Eagle as a brace in the marsh to get myself out because I couldn't lift my legs out of the mud. Years ago, that wouldn't have slowed me down, but, you know.
No, it's like a big suction cup.
Those inflatable, like I have a Mustang. I know you know what a Mustang is. I think Steve does too. When I'm out on Winnebago or Poygan or even just trapping, that is on underneath. You don't even know I have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one that's got the lanyard and the pill.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So even if I would be unconscious, as soon as it gets wet, it inflates. And I forget I have it on half the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's I have ice picks that I should wear more than I do. When I'm spearing, I have them, but I should have them when I'm trapping also, because there's more than once where I've had to claw my way out of a pond after breaking through, and you know the shore is icy. So, you guys are right. I'm the young one in the room, I think. Boy, 60 hit and it gets tough.
It definitely does, and I don't go anywhere near water without that inflatable on.
It's
even in front of my house if I'm out retrieving a bird, it goes on. Mm-hmm. You don't know.
No,
you have it on. They're so lightweight, but
that's why they're called accidents, because you didn't plan on it.
Yeah, so.
Not on purposes.
No, but you know, when you're an outdoor person, you're always adding a little bit more risk to your activities. You know, tripping on a piece of barbed wire, falling through the ice. I mean, we could talk about how many things can happen here for an hour. You know, but it's always you plan a little bit more, you strategize a little bit more. You prepare for your conditions. You know, obviously now with duck season starting to get a little bit colder, some of the good hunting is going to start coming up now. I mean, it's been, 70 degrees, and birds are just starting to move now. So that water gets cold real quick.
Yeah.
So, you know, being prepared for all of that is extremely important. And when we talk about trapping, let me ask you guys this. You know, I have never done it. I know Jim was after me for a long time to come and take the class. And, you know, now that I'm retired, that might be something I want to do, just to do it, you know, just to be a part of it, try it once, kind of like I want to shoot a bear. You know, I don't need to shoot one every year, but I'd like to go out and try it, see what it's like, experience it. Kind of like somebody saying, well, I've never been turkey hunting. Well, why don't you let me take you turkey hunting, and you can experience it for yourself and figure out what it is.
We get several retired people come to our trapping class every year. I teach a lot of classes with Jim, and I've taught a few on my own and with another instructor. But
he knows Steve Jordan.
You know,
yep.
So
Steve very well.
Steve Jordan and I, kind of teamed up for teaching some classes too. But I wanted to tell you a story about teaming up. I have my son, who's also a trapping instructor and a pretty darn good trapper. 2 years ago, him and I teamed up and we went up north and we trapped a bobcat for him. But anyhow, his son, who just turned 12, took their trapping class last year. The year before last, I took him out. I went and bought him a pair of waders, and we're going to trap muskrats. Him and I and his dad. So his dad has his sets. My grandson, his name is Jace. He's got his, and I have one. So Jace and I, he came with me when we made the sets, and his dad, the pro. And
I have a feeling Aaron isn't going to like this story when you're done with it.
He didn't catch any rats, but Jace and I did, and he was proud as a peacock. He had two rats, and he got pictures of him sitting there holding these two, of all things, muskrats, but it was something, you know.
Sure.
And that's the rewards you get from trapping. I mean, the animals are dispatched instantly, and the kids understand it right away, and they understand why you're doing it and how you're doing it. And when they get the reward, when they get the trophy, it means something to them. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, everybody, you know, there's the there's the grail at the end, but there's always the quest and what it takes you to get to that point. And
it's the journey.
Yeah, the journey. Yeah, the quest of where it takes you to get to whatever your grail is, whether it's a big buck or a big turkey or whatever it is. But when you talk about trapping now, as opposed to, do you see more of an influx of people wanting to get involved with it? Do you think it's starting to gain popularity, or where do you see trapping at now?
It's definitely on the incline. It was stagnant for about 2 years because of COVID. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have in-person classes, and the Trappers Association came up with the concept of Trapper's Ed, and I think we were one of the first in the nation, and in my opinion, the best in the nation. But we still answer, and I partner with the DNR. I'm the Trappers Association statewide coordinator, and then Aaron Kiso Webb is the DNR. And so as such, some of their rules, such as no gatherings during COVID, before we got a handle on it.
Right.
So yeah, there was a lot of people that took it online in correspondence. Now, since that time, I've had every single class I've held has been full to the gills.
Okay.
Some of it has been people that took it online. And Mark, you can tell someone how to clean a deer, but that person isn't going to go out in the woods, kill a deer, and do a good job of cleaning it.
Right.
Same as trapping. You can learn it online, but if you really want to be proficient, you really ought to have a butt in the chair class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so people are taking classes that during COVID took it online and are now taking it a second time so they can set traps and skin animals and go out and experience all this. Until you snap your fingers a couple times or get your boot stuck in the mud.
Jim and one of our other partners have made some tremendous films that you can look at it online, and you can almost take that whole class, with Jim online. But until you get out there and work with us and digging holes and setting traps, bedding traps, wading in the water, looking at water sets, understand the terminology and what it really looks like when you do it. The online stuff is great, but even if you took it online, for what it costs to take an in-person class,
$12.
Yeah, and the thing is, you get your hands on stuff. I mean, those of us
are. We skin for 4 hours. I have a pile of stuff that I save. So if you want to skin a raccoon or a muskrat or a mink, I've got them there. And there's going to be, I have a ton of instructors that show up on Saturday morning to help skin. That's the hard part. And even if you know how to skin those animals, when you catch your first bobcat, my phone is ringing at 5 o'clock in the morning. And it happens not every day, but three times a week, I get a call. Jim, I got my first otter. Jim, I got my first fisher, my first bobcat. Those seem to be the three that I get called for the most. Can you? Of course. Come on over. I drink black coffee. I expect a cup because I'm coming out and,
Right.
But, it's like Steve says, it is not the same. And we have a great correspondence course. Mike Widener runs that program and the online, and he does. If it wasn't for him during COVID, we wouldn't have stayed afloat. Mike he was phenomenal. And on that note, the people that I get to work with, I'm the coordinator, so I get patted on the back, but I have instructors that don't know how to say no. And we don't get paid anything. We're volunteer for everything. And so if I put it out there, I have a Google group for the Trappers Education Program. I send it out there, search and rescue. I don't know if it's a police faction or whatever, got a hold of me and said, hey, we want somebody to come down and teach us how to get our dogs out of a trap if they get caught, if we're trailing somebody or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I put it out there. I had 16 responses within 2 hours of people saying where and when.
Really?
Okay. And these are volunteers. They don't get mileage. They don't get anything. And the irony of it all is people applied for and got bobcat tags, fisher tags, and otter. Well, otter, everybody gets tags now. But all of a sudden now they're thinking of it. And the number one complaint I have is there's no Trapper's Ed classes in the month of November, very few in December. I teach one in January, but it's the only one I know about. Well, why do you suppose that is?
You might be trapping.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're volunteers. So, you know, for the people to wait until the last minute, you know how your poor planning doesn't constitute an emergency on my part kind of thing.
Sure.
So I do my best to explain, hey, these are volunteers. They're not getting paid. And they are the salt of the earth. When I was a kid and I grew up, the trappers were the sneak around and not let anybody know where they were trapping or how they were trapping or how they caught stuff. And you probably remember those days, you know, so-and-so is a trapper and you ask him about it and he wouldn't tell you anything.
Right.
That's changing. And these men and women that I work with are just, they'd give you the shirt off their back.
That's, and that's the true essence of the sport is that, you know, you pass that along, you get people involved somewhere along the line. And, you know, continue to develop and maintain that stewardship of the outdoors. And you guys both know, and I know, how important the element of trapping is to the environment. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that. And I think what we're going to do, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about more about that. So, hey, listen, just keep us tuned in here to Living the Outdoors on The Score. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Drew. Glad to have you along with us tonight. Jim Binder and Steve Kruger are joining me here, and we're talking about trapping. And we left off, guys, you know, talking about how essential, you know, trapping is. I think there's a lot of misunderstood elements that go in there. People just think that it's something other than what it is. But if not for trapping, we'd have some serious varmint issues.
It was interesting. I had, there's a rehab center not too far from me, and the person that runs it is not a big fan of trapping. And it got to me this year that they were quite upset that they weren't seeing the turkey poults that they had seen in the past. And that's a direct result of raccoon prices. Plain and simple, we are overrun with raccoons right now. There is no value in a raccoon. Very little. Maybe end of November, the big coon. I heard Grunewald fur buyers are suggesting that some of the 3 and 4X might bring a little bit of money. But the fact is, all of those raccoons, skunks, possums predate ground nesting birds. And as such, we have removed the apex predators. Now, we could argue that there's too many wolves. We're not going to go down that road. Mountain lions. There's that many mountain lions. Bobcats are starting to come back. Mm-hmm. I think there's a fair population of them. But the apex predators, the things that would prey on the raccoons, just really simply don't exist. And so when you talk about the carrying capacity of, let me give you a couple terms. You know, the birth rate, natality, and the death rate, mortality. It sort of defines the population. Well, the carrying capacity of a piece of land is how many animals can live on it year round. And you always have animals coming in, animals going out. You have animals dying by disease, by accident, hunters getting hit by cars, things like that. Well, if you've got this piece of land that can support, say, 20 raccoons, well, you know, February rolls around, mommy and daddy raccoon have that little raccoon hug, mm-hmm. and then come around April, guess what? We've got more raccoons. Well, we're exceeding the carrying capacity. The number of raccoons above the carrying capacity for that land is the harvestable surplus. As responsible trappers, that's what we try to take from a piece of property. We don't want to take every single raccoon.
Right.
Just the ones above the carrying capacity, the number of raccoons that could live happy, healthy lives in that area. So, you know, the idea of catching every single animal walking on the face of the earth would be self-defeating. Right. I don't want to do that.
That takes us also, like you talk about muskrats. We trapped some nice marshes a few years, 2 years ago, Jim and Steve Jordan and I, we moved in. I can't even remember how many traps we set. The first day we got several rats. Second day we got several rats. Third day we got fewer rats. Fourth day we got only a few rats and we pulled out because we don't want to take them all. We right. want to leave some rats there.
So. Sure. Yeah. It's not unlike any management tool. Deer hunting.
It is a management tool.
It is. You have to have, the like you said, the land can only support X amount of animals. Right. You know? And like you said, there's possums, there's skunks, and there's raccoons, and they're all egg eaters. They're nest robbers.
Yes, they are.
And you hear it across the country about, you know, the decrease in the turkey population. And when you mentioned that, I don't know why they're not even beginning to look at that. Or if they are, why are they not looking at it a little more intensely? As the, it's, there's just, when you see pictures of guys posting up on social media with 20 raccoons at a bait site, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 20 raccoons, that's a lot of raccoons. In one, and they didn't travel for miles to get there, I'm sure. So,
right.
You know, you take that in, you know, a 40 acres and then 80 acres and 120 acres, drive from here on Highway 45 all the way up through Marion, through Clintonville, New London, and count how many ditch tigers are laying on the road.
And that's a direct reflection of fur prices.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact we lost one of the biggest fur buyers, NAFA, which used to be Hudson Bay, doesn't exist anymore. Some of the import-export issues that are going on with some of the countries that used to be the big buyers. But the fact that raccoon prices are down, you can tell that just by the number of dead raccoons on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they were worth something, people would hit one and then somebody would stop and pick it up. Okay?
Especially those big ones.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
muskrats were the same way a few years ago. I mean, when muskrats were worth some money, somebody would hit one. It wouldn't lay on the road for an hour and somebody'd have it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's it's mind boggling to me that something they are not taking steps to do something.
Well, and we're starting to see we used to call them the oats and goats crowd. I don't know what you would call it. The people that tend to want to forage and mm-hmm. eat more natural stuff and be more environmentally friendly. And we're starting to see them realize that this is a renewable resource. And so as such, instead of saying trapping is bad, they're saying trapping is a way for me to get fur to wear, meat to eat, manage my property, and mm-hmm. things like that. And that's been a big swing in the last 10 years. I have people taking the course just to catch beaver to eat, things mm-hmm. like that. And I like that because the more, when I catch a beaver, the skull goes one place, the casters go somewhere else. I skin the tail, that gets used. I keep the fur, and quite honestly, I eat the meat. We make sausage, we make stir fry, we make fajita. My wife is an incredible cook. And I used to think you had to cook anything wild until it was brown all the way through. And, you know, her way of doing thing is she's a big fan of olive oil and low and slow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, that's sort of a change. And I like seeing that,
mm-hmm.
You know, a fur garment is a three generational item. Okay. And somebody asked me to justify fur over wool. Well, that's simple. That raccoon came from the wild where he lived and he was there naturally. That sheep was living in a field that used to be woods that the raccoon lived in before somebody cleared it and put a fence around it and raised sheep. Nothing against wool, but it is not as green and ecologically friendly as a raccoon hat is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I like what you're saying, that people are starting to find those grassroots things and get back to the earth and
foraging is
huge.
It's huge now. And you know, I'm sure you do. I look for morels in the spring.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. You know,
if you're a hunter, you're looking for
them. When I'm looking for horns and morels.
Yep. That comes same at the same time.
Out. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the opportunities we have. And I've been accused of overdoing my praise of the DNR. I went to Stevens Point, which is where all the good DNR workers come from.
Exactly.
And I heard a program on one of the public radio stations where there was a gentleman talking about the DNR mismanaging the fur bearer resource in Wisconsin, specifically beavers. And I'm thinking, what is he talking about? come up the Wolf River sometime. Just drive across 54 in the swamp by Foster's Marsh, mm-hmm. or get the phone calls I get in the spring. And then he further, you know, of course, you know, they're doing all this bad stuff. It's been implied that this and this. And I'm thinking, what are you looking at? Well, he wants to make a refuge in the southwest part of the state of Wisconsin. Okay. Well, are you familiar with the Illinois fox down in Racine, Kenosha, that mm-hmm. area? Okay. Yep. There's a whole lot of beavers in there causing a whole lot of problems. And if you've got one of those houses on there and they're chewing down your trees, mm-hmm. do you want a refuge?
No.
Now, they are indigenous animals. But in a trout stream, a beaver can totally change the whole ecosystem, the flora and fauna of that whole system. In the Wolf River, they're mostly bank beavers. They're not damming the Wolf River. Mm-hmm. But in the north branch of the O'Connell, I'll just grab that one, they dam that and they back it up. For 1 year, the water may be cool enough to support trout. But then the plant life changes, the insect life. Yeah, the wood ducks like it. But now you've got chubs and suckers instead of brook trout. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you've also flooded some land. So I'm not saying that I want to kill every beaver. I don't. I enjoy trapping beaver. I also like eating. Beaver meat is great. Mm-hmm. But as far as the DNR mismanaging, I'm not sure. I would really love to, and I don't remember the person's name. I would really love to debate them on it, where they're getting their information from, because the opportunities we have. Fisher, when you were a kid, were there fishers?
I saw one.
How about Martin?
No.
No. Turkeys?
No.
Okay. Was the deer as heavy as and thick as they are now?
No.
And yet people are, I hear this bad mouthing and intimating that they're doing a bad job of managing. And I'm going, the opportunities we have in this state are incredible. So I'm a big fan, and I do get accused of that. And of course I'll get down off my soapbox now, but I don't see that, you know, beaver need to be protected right now.
No, I mean, especially when you take a look at how we were talking about that before we came on the air. I've had my dealings with them and how destructive they can be. And it's exactly what happened to me. They changed the whole environment. You know, it goes from being, you know, a creek bottom to a overflowing pond full of wood ducks and the trees and
the silt comes in, silt and comes sediments.
In. Yeah. And it just changed everything. And you know, that for deer hunting, it wrecked my whole year because it changed all their trap. They couldn't run that creek bottom anymore. So they had to pick one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for me, they weren't on my side and they couldn't get across. But, you know, when you talk about that, and I think sometimes people just need to fully understand, you know, they look at it from their perspective of, well, you know, we want to save this, we want to do that, we want to preserve this, we want to preserve that. But, you know, then there becomes this unbalance of too many things.
And we're the cause.
We are, yeah,
exactly. Don't get me wrong. We are the cause. We remove the apex.
Right.
And there's a lot of animals out there that would eat beaver meat. Are we? Yep.
Yeah, in a minute.
You know, that would eat beaver meat if we had a more sustainable population of them. Mm-hmm. But we don't. So now it falls on us.
Right.
Okay. I would rather have a cool, clear, clean running stream, you know, with a gravelly bottom than a silted in muck pond with, you know, bog weeds.
Yeah. Full of bugs and
right.
stuff that's really not the way it's intended to be, because, you know, we all know how they operate. They have to chew mm-hmm. and they chew a lot of stuff.
And they need to be underwater in the winter, so that's why they build the dam to back up the water, so then they can cut down trees and make a food supply in a house, either in a bank or in a you know, a hut. And, I mean, talk about manipulating your environment. They're the kings.
Yeah, they're destructive, to say the least. All right, well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show right here on The Score. Back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Drew. Okay, if you want to chime in, it's 281-1570 or 866-653-1570. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email me at livingtheoutdoorswi@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear from you. I appreciate all the kind words and the comments, and I also appreciate the opportunity to make connections with people to get involved in the outdoors. You can also follow me on Instagram. It's outdoorslivingthe. This is my busy the time of the year. I'm most active now, and now that I'm retired, I'm a little bit more active, which is really kind of cool. I'm digging that in a real big way. But Jim Binder and Steve Kruger are joining me here tonight. We're talking about trapping, and you know, we kind of talking during the break about, you know, how important it is and what a great management tool it is, because, you know, we all of us have been aware of some situation at some point in time in the outdoor world where you get a disease outbreak and now poof, populations just decimated.
Or you've got a protected endangered species like the black-footed ferret.
Right.
They had a whole bunch of my college cohort do some trapping so that they could introduce them, and they wanted to make sure there were no badgers or coyotes and so on and so forth. And a lot of animals get relocated through foothold trapping. So it's definitely a management tool, but it's also a stop, I don't want to say a stopgap, but it's an insurance policy against that. I mean, a few years ago, we had a bad distemper outbreak and mange. You know, when you see a coyote that's dying of mange, it just tears my heart out. Mm-hmm. That's an animal just waiting to die, and they die of exposure. If they get it in the summer, they can usually get through it. If they get it in the winter and they scratch all their hair off, well, you see a hairless coyote. It just, oh, it's a pitiful thing to see.
Yeah, it just to watch an animal suffer like that under any circumstances due to disease or, you know, to suffer is far worse than you know, using the management tool and harvesting them and making use of it. Because, yes, obviously they get back into the earth and worms and all that other kind of stuff have to eat as well. But, you know, when you have these huge populations, it just, you're increasing your odds, in my opinion. I'm no expert. I'm no wildlife biologist, but, you know, just look at the numbers.
Death by Jim Binder is swift and certain.
Yeah.
Death by Mother Nature can be long, drawn out, and cruel. And as such, when I was younger, I probably did take pictures of animals that were live in the trap. Now, I don't see it that way.
Right.
I see an animal in the trap that needs to be, you know, euthanized, and mm-hmm. I do it as quickly and with as much compassion as I can. And I guess I have another example that I give people. When I take a raccoon out of a population, I don't do that raccoon any favors. I have euthanized him. I've killed him.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's say there were 10 raccoons living in that location. Now there's 9. There is 1/10 more food for each raccoon because I took him out. And I owe it to him to utilize him, whether I use the meat or the skull or the fur or whatever. And so I don't just, it's not a wanton willy-nilly, you know, slaughter.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And quite honestly, I do have feelings. I feel it when I euthanize an animal.
Yeah.
But it's part of it.
It is. And that is the definition of a true outdoorsman or sportsman, if you will. There isn't a bird, a deer, or anything that I haven't harvested that I didn't have, you know, get emotional. It's just, it's a different, you know, there's a difference between being a sportsman and a killer.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And when I was in my younger days, I'm a little ashamed to say that, but that I just wanted to kill something. But it's not like that anymore. You mature. You go through this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, I got to shoot my limited ducks. I got to shoot my this. Otherwise, it's not, you know, the trip is not complete, or, you know, I didn't have a good time. I don't have to shoot anything anymore. I just don't. I've come full circle. If I'm walking the trails and I put up a few birds and I get an opportunity, if I take one or two, great. But that's not why I'm there.
Right.
You know, you take a different attitude and a different approach towards, you know, harvesting an animal. You know, it's weird for me because any birds that I harvest, I don't just like whip them around and throw them in the back of the truck like a, you know, like a log. You know, I mean, I treat them with respect, and I think that's that whole thing that you're talking about as well. Is this, there's whole this respect for these animals. You're going into their backyard and you're taking their life, but you're doing something positive with it,
mm-hmm.
and you know, part of the management program. It's
right.
Like that for everything. You know, that's why these, when you speak, you know, of the DNR, that's why all these programs are in place, so that these opportunities can be presented to the next generation and the generation after that and the generation after that, so they can enjoy some of these outdoor activities that we have. Without implementing something, it would be an issue.
There is a class or a way to learn about every single outdoor activity that the DNR manages through the DNR.
Mm-hmm.
My counterpart, Aaron Kiso-Webb, went and took a Learn to Duck Hunt course.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I didn't even know that existed. And I see, I was looking the other day and I saw something about a prairie, building your own prairie. And I thought, wow, how far have we gone? I wonder mm-hmm. how many other states have this.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And one of the things that I have to blow our own horn. The Trappers Association has a group of women instructors that got together, and we now have a women's trap camp.
Nice.
Taught by women, for women. It's exclusive. They made it very clear, even though it was kind of my brainchild, that while they would take any help and assistance I wanted to give, I was not welcome. So last year, their wild game feed was beaver that I had caught and bobcat, and I smoked some catfish for them, and I get as much stuff for them as I can as far as materials. In fact, recently I raised funds and bought them. They have their own trailer.
Nice.
But they have gotten nationwide acclaim, and the ladies have done a phenomenal job. And they were on the cover of just about every single trapping magazine. And I know that the one that they weren't on, they're going to be on very soon, because I got some information for them. But the instructors, if you don't mind, Sky Good, Jenna Malnowski, Jody Hammerla, Caitlin Kernoski, Bridget Bazil, Aaron Kiso-Webb. And they were recognized as Instructors of the Year. And we're very proud of them. And I have gotten calls from other states saying, hey, how did we do this? Can we borrow the idea? And of course, absolutely. And then the women that took the course are, I'm getting pictures and emails. And I'll tell you what, they're out trapping some of the guys that,
a lot of coyotes.
A lot of coyotes. That seems to be the thing the women like. And to me, the coyote is the hardest animal in Wisconsin to catch. Wolves aren't that hard to catch, and bobcats and fisher and otter. But coyotes, if you start catching coyotes, you're accomplished. And these women have been sending me pictures, and I feel like a proud father,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, and that's so cool, because that's getting more people involved. And mm-hmm. when you get the women who take, you know, are empowered to do this.
That's how it was explained to me, was that this is an empowering thing. And yep. Jim, if you're there, even though you might be the kindest Alan Alda individual in the world, it's not the same.
Exactly.
So please. And it was respectful. And of course, I'm probably making more out of it than it was. But I kind of understand. I get that.
Absolutely.
And so, like I said, and they list it online. And literally, the class 40 spots fills up within a couple hours.
That's awesome.
So.
Yeah, you know, and that's just, and sometimes women will relate much better to other women. And if that's the way it has to be, that's great. You'd like to see that instructional aspect across the board,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you realize that when you participate in one of these programs and become a mentor, you understand that a little bit more. And
it's hard to describe sometimes, but I think you and I've had this conversation. I know Steve's this way, but if I was to take out Crazy Red here, deer hunting, right? And he was to shoot a monster buck, bigger than any buck I'd ever shot in my life. Okay. And I had something to do with him getting it.
Mm-hmm.
That would empower me as if I had shot it myself.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that don't get that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But when I get the students calling me saying, hey, I caught a bobcat, can you help? Absolutely. That's part of it, is because I don't want to say I'm puffing my chest, but I had something to do with this person learning how to do it. And maybe it was just the encouragement or the passion that I've passed on. But that empowers me. And it just... I'm coming up on 5 years as the state coordinator. It went by like a snap of my fingers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do have to fight battles once in a while, and I do step on toes because of my personality. But,
Jim, you're exactly right. And we say this, I close my show every week with the power that we have to impact people's lives through the outdoors is so much more powerful than we understand.
Right.
You know, because you're taking your knowledge and experience and you're passing that along. I loved when I was doing the Learn to Hunt Turkey Hunt program. I would be the first one to say, I'll take the ladies.
Oh, absolutely. You know, they listen better than the guys.
They listen better. They're attentive. And
there's no testosterone issues.
Oh, yeah, I know. I absolutely loved it. And I think that's what's I'm starting to see that you know, more and more in the outdoors that the women getting involved and being these huge influences in the outdoors is just it's spreading. I would like to see it go a lot farther because that's just more people we have in our army of conservationists, you know, to keep us going.
You talk about women in the outdoors. You know, I've been trapping with Jim for several years now, and I've yet to see Jim clean a skunk. Now, my oldest son, the pro, as I call him, he's cleaned a skunk and got sprayed in the face. But I watched Sky Goody clean a skunk and extract, and this is, you know, most people would say women don't want nothing to do with this skinning stuff. Well, she not only skinned the skunk, but she extracted the essence out of the scent from the skunk's glands. I mean, this is stuff that, you know, I mean, if you want to learn how to do this stuff, that lady is phenomenal. I mean,
she is, and she's a good sport. You know, if she was in here talking, and I would have asked her to come instead of Steve, because, you know, she's way prettier than he is.
It doesn't take much.
But she lives four counties away. We have a skinning demo days at the Binder Farm. And if I think of it, Mark, I'll let you know. And a bunch of us get together with a bunch of animals, and we just, it's free. Yeah. Just show up and we'll teach you how to skin. And she called. We wanted to do Fisher. She wanted to do Skunk. Obviously, I lost that fight, right? I know when to fight my battles. But we did put her downwind. But at the end of the day, yeah, the number one thing that people appreciated the most was Sky Skunk demonstration. And that's awesome. I've got a couple in my freezer just waiting for her for this next summer.
Perfect. All right. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap it up here on Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show on The Score. All right. Welcome back to Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show here on The Score. I'm your host, Mark Druick. Got a couple minutes left here. Jim Binder and Steve Kruger are joining me. We've been talking about trapping. You can always go back and listen to the podcast. If you missed any of these, you can go on to thescorewi.com. You can pick those up there. And it's also on iTunes. You can go onto that and download it, and you can pick up all kinds of fun stuff from the past. But, Steve, we're going to kind of close it out a little bit, talking about the, you know, obviously the class and what it takes and how do you get involved. So maybe you can share that with the listeners, please.
Well, the classes themselves, the instructors typically are very very knowledgeable, and we all do a lot of hands-on. But if you want to have a class, or you want to find out how to get a class set up, all you really are, if you go to the back of your trapping regulations book, and if you don't have one, just go online or go to the local sporting goods store and pick one up. Jim's name, number, birth date, driver's license number,
credit card
number, everything's in the back of the trapping regulations. And if you contact Jim, he'll set you up with an instructor somewhere close by. We've had high schools will call us from, they have a class. Typically, it's an agricultural class. They want to have trapping as part of that curriculum. We go to high schools. We'll just go to your clubhouse if you have, you know. But you have to have enough attendees for us to drive any distance, you know, to come.
Understood.
Jim and I went down to
Fort McCoy
one year, taught a whole bunch of, in fact, some of the guys, there was a federal game warden there, taught these guys about trapping because the guys on the military bases wanted to know trapping.
Sure.
Because of the varmints, you know, they have, you know, they're varmints, and that's what they really are. We get a lot of calls on nuisance trapping, but if you want a class, get a hold of Jim. Just about any instructor is happy to help you and get you set up and ready to rock and roll and put a class together.
How long does the class take?
All the information is supplied by us also.
Okay.
A class, we can do a class in a day, or we can, if we really get, have a lot of fun with it, we can make it last 2.5 days.
Okay.
Generally, the minimum is 12 hours, and I don't know if it's statutory, but I think we set it as minute. We set it as 12 hours. 16 is about what the average is. So a Friday night, we try to get the classroom out of the way. Saturday is the hands-on. Sunday's the wrap-up.
Very interesting, and you know, I wish we had more time to get into all the different, you know, types of traps and stuff, but that's why we're encouraging people to take the course. You want to find out more.
And there is, if they go on the Wisconsin Trappers Association YouTube page, there are, I'm going to say, 35 YouTube videos. I made a lot of them. I have a friend, Bob McMillan, who donated the time, but they're there. Go and watch them, Steve.
Okay. The importance of a class is, keep in mind, trapping is the most regulated outdoor sport there is in the state of Wisconsin, with all the trap types and dates and seasons.
All right, good to know. Gentlemen, thank you both for taking
Mark,
the time to join us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun, isn't it?
It is.
All right, everybody, thanks for taking the time to tune us in here on Fleet Farms Living the Outdoor Show. And remember, if you ever have the opportunity to impact somebody's life through the outdoors, take advantage of it. I guarantee you it will make you a better person. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Have a great evening and live life in the outdoors.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.